This episode is brought to you by Harrah's Resort SoCal. Nestled against a rolling hillside and just down the road from Palomar Mountain, guests at Harrah's Resort SoCal can expect gorgeous views, friendly staff, available night and day to encourage everyone to have a great time. When I was there recently, I had a chance to dine at California's first and the nation's largest Hell's Kitchen. And it's true, the beef Wellington and sticky toffee dessert are great. The restaurant is inspired by the hit TV show and features a menu approved by the Michelin star celebrity chef, Gordon Ramsay himself. Hope to see you all at Harrah's Resort SoCal in 2024.
I'm Dr. Kulin Carolyn Valverde. I'm associate professor at UC Davis. I'm also the founding director of the New Vietnam Studies Center. And how I got into Aozai, generally speaking, but particularly the Aozai Festival that's going to happen in San Jose, May 15th of this 2025, is through a personal connection with its founder, Jenny Doe. I had the first exhibit on the Aozai in 2006 that really inspired Aozai Festival, creating an exhibit looking contemporary youth culture through the lens of the Aozai.
Welcome to The Vietnamese. I'm your host, Kenneth Nguyen. Being part of a culture of nearly 100 million Vietnamese people in the world today comes with a lot of pain, proud history, and privilege. Join me as I highlight and explore the Vietnamese experience from all over.
Carolyn, thank you so much. You've been on the podcast before, and yes. We had such a great conversation about the actual work that you do. But we're here today to talk about the Aozai Festival. And Actually sounds like there's legislation to make this sort of like Aozai Day or Vietnam Commemoration Day sort of a reality. So, you know, we're here to talk about all of the intricacies of the Aozai and why it's so important in our lives for the Vietnamese diaspora.
Great question. I think, you know, it goes back to this question of like, you know, what are we, who are we, and what that's the question. And I think when you're thinking about Vietnam's identity, the diasporic identity, if you ask 10 people, and I often give this, you know, metaphor, what is being Vietnamese or what is Vietnamese culture, you'll get 10 different answers, right? But, and, you know, from China or Malay or, you know, all that. But we can all agree that the Aozai, you know, very intrinsically represent Vietnamese culture. And so because of that, there's been this huge interest in the Aozai. And the Aozai also is that, you know, it has a long history in Vietnam, obviously, and I could, you know, brush over that. But in the diaspora, it's especially interesting because it's that way of, for us to go, am I Vietnamese? Can I partake in this wearing of the Aozai? And you know, that's a conversation. And I recall you talking about that. You know, it's like, can I wear this male Aozai? What is that this next level of being Vietnamese for me? And so Aozai has just this wonderful sort of like foray into our culture. And that's how it was for me. I remember, I was born in Vietnam, and I remember, I don't remember much, but there was a picture of me in a pink Aozai when I was maybe 3 or 4. And, you know, I've always had that. And I didn't get a chance to really revisit that until I was a college student, right? And we're doing the culture show, the Vang Nghe. And they said, you need a couple of Aozais, a pink and a yellow one or something like that. And so I told my mom, and she made me, you know, an Aozai. And I was like, oh, you know, this is me revisiting my Vietnamese-ness, you know? And it wasn't until many years later that I started to do research and work in Vietnam in 1993. And I bought some fabric in Thailand, and I came back to Vietnam, and my grandmother goes, go to my tailor. You know, like everyone has that tailor they go to, that they have like almost a really intimate relationship with, you know, because I often say that every Vietnamese is a designer. You know, we all go to our tailor and we sort of, you know, work it out. Like we want this high neck or short neck, and you know, high tunic or, you know, short tunic, and, you know, long sleeves, you know, so on and so forth. And so we're the designer, and the tailor, you know, understands that and understands our body. And that's the thing, the Aozai is made to the body specifically, right? And so you have that intimate relationship. So I made an Aozai with this well-known tailor that was making Aozais for the Vietnam Air stewardesses, you know, and so on and so forth. And I, you know, I was really like, oh, this is yet another understanding. And then fast forward to 1999, you know, this is when Vietnam was remaking itself, had gone into the market economy, and it really needed an image that wasn't about war, you know? And what a better image about peace and commerce than the Ao Dai and women in Ao Dai, if you will, you know? And that's, of course, you know, women have often been the metaphor for the nation and good and bad, and it doesn't go uncritically, but certainly there was this idea that, you know, we're not about the, you know, the VCs in you know, black pajamas, were about these beautiful women. And I was like, you know, other countries, Indonesia and others did, you know, this kind of like rebranding of sorts. And so Vietnam did that and really bolstered its garment industry in that time too, right? Taking on the new labor of, you know, the China, extensions. And then it was really then that designers, you know, we started to have modern designers. You know, because the truth of the matter is Vietnam in the diaspora up to the last decade or so was really much, pretty much culture in a bubble, like 1975 culture. So even our Ao Dais were still the mini Ao Dais that were popular in the 60s and 70s. And it was still like silk, certain kind of silk. And it was still these palazzo pants, you know. But actually, you know, as with everything, it should evolve. And in Vietnam, that was, the evolution that, you know, a lot of people may not know, but Ao Dai was not allowed to be made after the war. It was seen as Western. It was seen as decadent. It was seen as South Vietnamese. And frankly, it required too many yardage of very precious material material fabric to make these Ao Dai. So it wasn't, you know, allowed. And actually, those who are making royal Ao Dai, if they find gold threads in your house, you could be in trouble, those kinds of things, you know? And so it wasn't really until the late 90s where the Vietnamese government really took a concerted effort to promote their artists and in the colleges and say, hey, go into design. And then so they had at the helm people like Minh Hạnh and Si Hoàng, partake in Ao Dai history and consume Ao Dai would know these names.
I had Si Hoàng on a few months ago to talk about the Ao Dai, and I'm learning through talking to other people that there are other sort of histories about the origin of Ao Dai. And there's so many perspectives, just like the origin of pho. Nobody can really pinpoint it. Can you offer your historical point of view?
Oh my God, I really, you know, fear this because it is really diverse. And I think all of it is very legitimate. And at different points, I think in history, you know, you can make a claim. I would like to think that it comes from India. And travels through, because that is so much of the culture of Southeast Asia is from India. And so it came through, I believe, in India and then taken on by Cham, who were the precursors of the Vietnamese Ging people now. And so it is the Cham that I think, you know, can say that they were maybe the precursors to the Ao Dai.
What exactly is Cham's contribution in form to the Ao Dai?
I think the tunic and the pants, that is very similar to what goes on in India and Pakistan and stuff like that. That more or less look. And then of course you can make arguments that, you know, we have the, you know, the four panels from China and other places. And you can say that we have some French influence in terms of the, the certain sleeves, raglan and other things, yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, you can, at different points, I think you can say, oh, there are definitely influences here. And like with so many things, and fashion, honestly, evolves. And so to say our sense of Ao Dai now is from a specific origin or a specific point, I don't think does it a rich enough justice. And actually, even now, there's different camps. Like, you know, you'll have a Si Hoàng camp that really believes in the modern form, right? That we know now, which is just the tunic and pants and then and the raglan sleeves. And then you have Minh Hạnh camp that's like, you know, everything under the sun. You can have embroidery, you can have in jeans, you can have it in whatever, you can have them and so on and so forth. And so, you know, and within those two camps, there's diversity there, you know, in thinking about the Alzai. And so, and I think everyone has their own taste about the Alzai, right? Some would be like, they would never wear it, you know, without the palazzo pants, and others like myself would wear with jeans, you know, and then, you know.
This episode is brought to you by Red Boat Fish Sauce. I love cooking with Red Boat because it's made with only two ingredients, wild caught anchovies and sea salt. This premium fish sauce is made in Phu Quoc, Vietnam and bottled right here in California. You can find Red Boat at select Asian supermarkets like 99 Ranch, H Mart, and Tung Fak. I just emceed a show up in Portland, and Ngo Nhạc Huy was the designer for the fashion show. I never knew how important these sort of fashion shows were for our community until I went to this thing, because I grew up in around it. You know, you don't really think about it. And I'd be like, why is this so unique and special? But boy, the fashion show that Ngo Nhạc Huy put on, from the music that he selected, from the garments and the colors and all of the care of walking with the models, it was such a cool experience to kind of see it the whole weekend, to be with Ngo Nhạc Huy, and what a fantastic person he is too.
It's an artistic expression. I mean, and with that, you know, I want to segue to what we're trying to do with Alzai Festival, which, for a little bit of context, you know, in it really began, you know, as I said, my 2006 exhibit on the Alzai, and it was the first one that wasn't protested, I guess, that really spoke about Vietnam and the diaspora. And it was at the San Jose Quilts and Textile Museum, and I co-curated with Robin Latrine then. And then, and also the Vietnam Arts Alliance, and we worked together. And, you know, Jenny Doe and others attended, and they're like, hey, you know, these Alzais don't look anything like the Alzais I'm used to seeing from 1975. You know, it's really evolved. And we have these, you know, the from the diaspora, you know, designing, and also those from Vietnam, and Si Hoang also was a part of that. But we also had, you know, collections from really old Alzai, you know, like priest Alzai and queen Alzai and kings and you know, just this different collections as well. And also those who really, you know, the Miss Nam over, you know, who is architect for the presidential palace. He made it his point as a modern designer that was trained in France to always wear the Alzai. So we had his Alzais and also his wife and those kind of things. And then, so fast forward to Alzai Festival is really giving our community a chance to see the evolution and the beauty and the level of culture that we can produce. I think that gives young people and old alike a sense of pride, you know, and a sense of way to celebrate our culture. And so Jenny Doe, who founded Alzai Festival, unfortunately passed away, you know, untimely at the age of 56, just a couple of years ago. And so we had starting, I believe in 2011, Alzai Festival every other year, but then it's been 6 years because of COVID and then her passing. So it's been taken up by Anna Nguyen, who also works with Jenny in Friends of Hue. So a component of this is also raising funds for an orphanage in Vietnam that trains young people, especially like young women, to you know, empower themselves in the workforce, etc. And in any case, so this Alzai Festival, you know, was going strong, and it was very, you know, brought so many people. And a big part of the mission is really to expose Vietnamese culture to not just our community, but the community at large, like in San Jose. And then so ultimately, Alzai Festival became Alzai Day, which is a California-wide. So it began in San Jose city-wide, and then it became California, where it's, you know, May 15th is Alzai Day. And that's the only commemoration of our culture that we have in California, and I dare to say the nation. And so that is a big deal. That's part of our legislation. That means our officials recognize the value of our culture, right? And that's happening. And And so Ao Zai Festival is happening again this year. And the weekend, it's usually the weekend of May 15th. So it'll be happening May 18th. And it's an open public festival that has, you know, women in Ao Zai. It has, you know, some scenes from shows. And then it has a parade. And young people are definitely, you know, it's very family oriented. And it's free to the public, and that's during the daytime. And in the evening, we have a gala where it's like the show that you mentioned, you know, where it's a production. And in this case, you know, I brought on Bebe Cui Nguyen to write a modern day fairy tale that takes on the themes of, you know, what I presented, which is generational conflict, preserving our culture, our connection to animism, our connection to being displaced and on the diaspora, and feeling marginalized in our society because of the way we look or, you know, our accent or anything else. And it's all put in there. And also the idea of family and coming together and the ways in which we contribute to our community, you know. Jenny Do is mixed race like myself. And so she, you know, was confronted with a lot of racism within our community. And she worked really, really hard to really bring what is good about our community forward, you know. And so themes of, you know, acceptance in our community is really important. I mean, you know, people can feel marginalized for not speaking Vietnamese or, you know, for not liking certain Vietnamese things or, you know, liking too much Vietnamese. I know, you know, there's always criticisms. And I think, you know, Jenny being who she is and also what Ao Zai Festival represents is an inclusiveness. And because of my participation, I'm very focused on the next generation. So, you know, bringing in young designers, bringing in, you know, different looks and using not a folktale, but a modern folktale that takes on these themes and bringing in modern music, fusions of, you know, maybe traditional instruments, but with, modern beats, like, you know, in hip hop or anything else, right? And so it's this idea, really, this particular Ao Zai Festival, I think it's exciting in that way, that is really pushing, you know, some boundaries. But, you know, but as you know, working in the community is a set of compromises and that, you know, we try to please everyone, but we won't please any, you know, everyone. That's the kind of thing, you know, that goes on.
Speaking of compromise and speaking of modernity, I'm looking at your screen right now for all those who are listening and not being able to see the video. There are some models that are presented and I love it. There are aoyais that I've never seen before. And it's cut below the shoulder line, which is amazing. And some of these, you know, these, I don't know what to call it, accoutrements. I don't know what, you know, the headgear.
Accessories
are, it feels like from the roaring 20s of the United States, you know?
Oh yeah, it could be anything. Behind me, you can see, this is Gong Chi's design and he's our first recognized international couture designer, right? And he dresses the Adele and Rihanna and so on and so forth. So, you know, we have, and he is from Vietnam and lives in Vietnam, you know? So these are the things I think the community would be very proud of to know. And we try to expose that. Moreover, you know, I'm also in charge of programming. So for example, there's a film called Go Ba Saigon or The Tailor that was done in 2017. And we're premiering, we're screening it at the Asian Art Museum in, I'm sorry, the Modern Art Museum in San Jose. And afterwards, we're going to speak with a tailor because again, you know, we want to, you know, the community to know that spaces like a museum should reflect community because the community needs to be in, you know, they're the patrons, you know, and so we're having a discussion with a tailor and her family's multi-generational tailors from Vietnam all the way to, you know, the diaspora in 1975 and continue that with her and her sister. And then we're also having an Ao Zai Day celebration on the the screening of the Taylor and also the and by the way, the main producer is Tui, and she is student of Tui Design, and she produced that film. And the theme is that a mother is from the past, and the mother is a well-known designer of tailor, right? I'm sorry, a tailor, and then her daughter from the 60s wants modern, want to make modern things. And then, so there's that conflict there. And then it brings it all the way up to the present of, how that plays out. And so there you have fashion and art, coming together. And that's great. And that's on April 12th coming up. And on May 15th, the day of the outside, we're going to have a celebration at the Martin Luther King Museum. I'm sorry, Martin Luther King Library in San Jose. And we'll have models and outsides, and also the four designers that are going to be involved in Outside Festival. And they include Do Cheng Hoai Nam, Dun Tin Kang. We have Laura Pardo, and she's actually, interestingly, her and her now passed husband Diego started Chula in Vietnam as expatriates from Spain. And they've been there 20 years, raised their family there, three children. And she has, and she is inspired by the Aozai and her, and that's what they design. And then we also have Tommy Lay, who's from Southern California. And he's going to be a part of it too. So, we have people in the North, the Middle, the South, and then of course in the diaspora, and they're going to be speaking. So you get to meet them and learn about how they got started. Because I really I'm a big believer in the exhibit that I'm going to put forth is really Vietnam, contemporary Vietnam, to the lens of the Aozai. So a big part of that is the designers that I choose and the designers that, are with ADF, we want people to know their history because we want to humanize it. It's just not this Aozai that's just kind of going out. There's rich stories. Like Tommy told his family that he was studying to be an engineer, and then he secretly took design classes and became a design major, And then we have others who, like Do Trinh Hoai Nam, was very young, and he was just, after school, there were just tailors babysitting him. And so he just got really interested in it and decided to, design Aozai. And then he designed them for his wife, and then his mother-in-law as, wedding Aozais. And he's like, wait a minute, I'm really good at this, And then, not only did he start designing, but he started a school of design, to push this forward. And I think that's also the trend that's happening is designers are recognizing that a way to extend this and the way to evolve the Aozai and modernize the Aozai, make it still be a really, connected to our culture, is to educate the public and very young people to have a passion for the Aozai. I mean, I don't know. I think it's like anything that one gets passionate about, like golf or fishing or whatever. I think Aozai, or the love of the Aozai, it becomes super addictive. And then you just want to know more about the Aozai. And
My mother was an Aozai maker and designer before 1975. So she did that to support a big family of 11 kids. And she was the oldest of these kids. And so I have a deep connection with Aozai, and I have a deep obsession with Aozai. I didn't wear it growing up. I just started maybe 3 or 4 years ago wearing Aozai. But I think about this question of the kimono, and the kimono in the United States is sort of used for ceremonial dress. It's not really ever crossed into the mainstream as you think it would have or should be. I don't know. That's debatable. But I could see the Aozai doing a little bit more distance than the kimono, because I think it's a lot easier to wear. And it just... to me, it just there's a sort of hipness to the Aozai, and it could kind of take on different forms, like the Aozais that are behind you right now. Do you think that it is something that will pop off into the mainstream culture one day of the United States?
I pray every day. So I mean, I wear it when I teach. I wear it out and about. Yes, absolutely. And my students,
Wow.
like decades later, they say, I remember you as the professor who wore the alzai, but I don't wear alzai like traditionally. I funk out my alzais. I'm wearing like harnesses with my alzai. I'm like, I go, I mean,
How
because
many do you have?
in the excess of 50.
Wow.
Yes, legit. And I have almost every, like, and so many designers out there, but I have a good number of the major designers, and I've designed my own. I've worked with tailors that are amazing designers, like Nancy Bui. And so I have my fair share. I have half a dozen Ming Haing, and Si Huang has gifted me an alzai, so on and so forth. Many Tui design too, I have. And it's funny. I mean, okay, let's go back to your question because I think it's a great one. First of all, you can argue that kimono has taken different forms, like anything from a robe that was, made by the West in the 20s or, so on and so forth, that really got popular. This sort of orientalist kind of rendition of the kimono, if you will. And it's gonna become very commodified and commercialized in this like tourist way too, So there's that. And so it's not the beautiful, refined, ceremonial aspect of the kimono, because there's so many layers from the obi to, to this and that. It's a production, right? Now, Vietnamese alzai arguably is much more utilitarian, and I will say that I think, particularly in South Vietnam, pre-75, had a lot to do with that, because you would, they basically the service industry, the hospitality industry, the travel industry, offices, everyone wore the alzai. It was a uniform, it was what one wore. So we have it in our history, to wear it every day. Okay. Not to mention that up to very recently, last few years, it was the high school uniform. The white alzai was the high school uniform for girls. Right? So here we are saying essentially we wear it every day, and we have history of that. So when in the US, if you don't have that sort of history or understanding or a good spot to wear the alzai, it also could be relegated to ceremonial or special events, like a wedding or like a show or something like that, or vangay, right? People don't necessarily yet wear it every day, right? And in part because they're not thinking about the material or the fit. So previously, I mentioned that traditionally, and so that the romance part of the tailoring of the alzai is to be fit to form, But the reality of it is, that's not very practical for everyday wear, because you move a little bit, you eat a little bit of lunch, and it's like things just pop, 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 right? So now what happens is there's the zipper that's been introduced. There's more loose, cuts. There's also different fabrics like knit
Denim. I've been wearing denim. Oh, yes.
denim, knit, you name it. So that allows you to, wear it more every day. And if you're a daring fashionista of sort, then you're like, I don't care what people say. I'm going to be a trendsetter and wear this to Flip Top or wherever you go, or to, Trader Joe's or whatever, So the point being, if you make it a thing, then it becomes your thing, And then people are like, oh, kind of looks fly over there. I think I'm gonna go ahead and accept that gift from my mom or my aunt and wear something, or just really shift your thinking. Alzai can be cotton, alzai can be linen, alzai can be all these things and can be different cuts. And like I said, it could be a zipper. So it's like a putting on a shirt, for goodness sakes. How difficult can it be? And in terms of bottoms, you don't have to have the cumbersome palazzo silk pants or polyester or whatever you wear. You can wear, jeans or slacks or whatever else. I mean, really just put it out there and just look through Pinterest and even online and get some inspiration,
Yeah, I was in Saigon with my daughter recently and we bought her an Ao Yai. This episode is brought to you by Songkhai Distillery, my only go-to gin company. Established in 2018, Song Khai Distillery is Vietnam's first gin distillery, founded by Daniel Nguyen, a Vietnamese American from Southern California. No matter how many people I have at my parties, we are always pouring Song Khai gin. Song Khai gin is handcrafted in small batches and prioritizes using botanicals and ingredients that are native and heirloom to Vietnam. The result is a product uniquely Vietnamese in taste and aroma. Song Khai is now growing to include rice wine and traditional Vietnamese herbal liqueurs similar to Amaro. Song Khai prides itself in Vietnam, from the farmers who grow the fruits and herbs to the artists behind the artwork and design. Song Khai is a community effort of people who are proud to be Vietnamese and collectively embody the spirit of Vietnam. The craziest, trippiest thing, which is the pants, had a sewn-in, sheer, gauzy, like longer tutu, like a ballerina's tutu. So it was like the most cute construction of a tutu outside of a pants. And the Aoyai was on top of it. So it was like this sort of cool skirt. And I love it.
She loved it. I wear pleated skirts. I wear, a tiered skirt, like what you call tutus, tulle. And then, and I wear, I wear anything and everything under my aozai, to be honest, and sometimes I wear nothing, but of course the slits are tight. Right. So that's another thing, at the end of the day, some purists may ask, like, when does it stop? When is an aozai not an aozai anymore, right? And for me, I don't really have those kind of limits, but for others, they'll say it has to be a tunic and it has to be a pants, or it has to have, it's not even collar. It could be collarless. It could be off the shoulder.
What about the social media influencers who are literally wearing nothing underneath? And the string, and is that disrespectful to our culture?
I don't think it's disrespectful as much as ignorant. And because I think they really think they're being really cool. And some of them don't even say it's a Vietnamese aozai. They just say, Asian aozai or Chinese. They say Chinese dress or Asian dress, or if they say it's Vietnamese dress, they think, wow, the Vietnamese are really risque. Their slits are all the way to their waistline, and they didn't know that you're supposed to wear pants or skirt or something on the bottom.
They probably did know, and and they just went for it and appropriated this sort of beautiful.
In which case, I'm a really chill person, I don't make that a thing that I put my energy on. I understand the academic and also the social arguments around appropriation. And it gets, I can get into the weeds of it. I teach a class on fashionology. So, that I understand. But at the same time, honestly, I'll give you an example. There was the Chang Song, a high schooler who wore, a kipao Chang Song to her prom, a red one. And so the white community and the Asian American community were like, oh my God, that's so disrespectful. She's appropriating this and that other thing. And then ironically, the Chinese were like, that's cool. And so it's like, who are you speaking for? What are you defending? Mm-hmm. What has this person done wrong, to wear a kipao? And inversely, I know of Asian American young people that said, I can't wear a kipao because it'll make me look too Chinese.
Yeah.
Chinese, So because they've been this colonized mind and a concept where a Madonna wearing it would be okay, or some other celebrity, Katy Perry or what have you, wearing these items is okay. But if they wear it, somehow it's not okay. Now, how did we get there?
Yeah.
How did we get there? And that I don't want. And I also don't want the policing of clothes or fashion or identity as well. I get that, a certain group can wear a turban and they might be harmed. And another group may just be like, that's so chic. I get that there are certain privileges for certain people in our society. At the same time, I don't want to waste my time policing fashion, just like I don't waste my time policing language or anything like that. That's just me.
Yeah, that makes sense. When I look out into the landscape in the last 20 years of, oh yeah, designers, the majority have that I've known have been men, but you've named a few women today, but it right. seems like the overwhelming, like Calvin Hip or Tai Nguyen or, Ngo Nhạc Huy or, Si Huang, most are men. And why is it that women are not outnumbering the men designers?
And, I don't know. I can just throw my theory in there because I haven't taken a formal survey of any sort. But I think, it boils down to maybe this gendered way of thinking about professions, So maybe women are seen as tailors. And then when you take the next step as a, someone that, designs and creates their own workshop or atelier, it's they're designers. And then their others are the tailors. So the women are the tailors and maybe the men are designers. Mm. And then I think even when women move to designing, because I know a lot of tailors, I wouldn't say a lot, a fair amount of tailors that also design, but they're stuck with the label of the tailor. And somehow, not that the tailor is any less than a designer, because God knows there's a lot of designers that cannot sew. And if you don't know how a thing fits on the body, you can want XYZ, but it may not, we might not render in a certain fabric that you want, or it might not render in certain bodies that you want. So you need that expertise of a tailor and the discerning eye of a tailor, and also the artistic eye of the tailor, in which they innovate ways to make things, right? That is a skill. And a designer in Vietnam in particular, especially because designing and design schools is a very new thing, like maybe in the last decade. The majority of designers are not tailors, and cannot put garments together. And so they rely on a workshop, to do that work. So I personally do not differentiate the value of a tailor versus a designer. But I would be in the minority, because I think the vast majority would, basically say, this is just a service. I'm going there. I'm the, the designer or the maker. Right. And the tailor is just like putting shit together, And then I was like, oh, that's not how it works, but okay.
Si Wang had a funny reply to my question about men designing. Oh yeah. And a funny thing, he goes, well, because I enjoy women, I enjoy the way they look. Mm-hmm. Therefore, I am passionate about putting clothes onto women's bodies. And I thought that was so interesting. But, you think about it, and the responsibility or the opportunity of women should be more. There should be more women designers that are given the opportunity, just like the men in this space. And, that I find that to be very tricky.
I think that your burden to bear may be to really cross the gender divide on this. I'm joking. I'm half joking, but
I
think
I hear that.
So important. I think it's so important. And so I know Si Huang personally. I've worked with him for nearly 20 years. And he is working on the exhibit with me, we are friends, and I admire him greatly. And here's something he doesn't tell you. He also loves to dress men. And if you ever see him, he's always donning the most beautiful aozais or shirts that are inspired by the aozai. He himself is a walking model of how men could and wear aozai. And I'm like, I love that. I want it for my partner, And he's like, okay. And he, another thing you may not know, he's in theater. And so he acts, and he also designs costumes for the production. And, half the people or more are men. And it's beautiful, the stuff he puts together. So I think it's just this, like, historically, traditionally is this way. But the truth of the matter is that, when you're passionate about the aozai, you're kind of passionate about the aozai across the board.
Yeah.
You know, and so he only talks about the female body, but he is also interested in the male body, and because he wants everyone to wear the owl's eye.
Yeah, I think that was a tongue-in-cheek answer and question from both he and I, but I love your explanation because I think it's true. I think that when you look out into the landscape, like Tai Nguyen and his partner, and the way that they get dressed up, and the way that they put aoyais on men, is the same passion that they put towards women's aoyais. But I would love to see sort of more men in the United States wearing aoyai. How can we make that happen?
Oh my God, that is an offline conversation. And I'm so down with that, to work with you on a project like that. I think that is just so cool. I think, you know, men deserve a foray into Vietnamese culture as much as women. They deserve, you know, to partake in this, you know, sense of designing culture, creating culture, you know, showcasing culture. I think it's a disservice when we don't give men the opportunity. I feel you feel that, well, all those lost years that I could have loved the Aozai, and I grew up, you grew up literally amongst Aozai. Why not have, you know, had you had models, had, you know, had someone say, you know, this is what we do. So I, you know, my son is a teenager now, so he's like rebelling against everything that's mommy. But up to this year, every that season, they're like, where's our new Aozai? Where's my Aozai?
My kid, the same.
And my son dons the Aozai like no other.
Yeah.
You know, and they're mixed race and with big afros, you know, so they look especially, you know, interesting. But in any case, they love the Aozai. To them, that is very much a part of being Vietnamese. And we never made the distinction that, you know, you can only wear this. And actually, we all wear each other's Aozais, you know, and Tusa has worn my Aozai, and people are like, what's that, you know, at school or wherever, they're like, what's that on your, you know, chest? And he goes, oh, these are darts. This is actually made for a woman, but I wear them because I don't, you know, I don't care. And they're like, oh, but he's a tall, good looking, you know,
get away with it.
mixed race kid. So if he says that, they're like, okay, must be fine, you know. but yeah, so darts are made so that, you know, to give enough fabric for the, you know, women's breast area. But anyway, the point of it is we all three of us, because we're about the same size, share our size, and I you know, because I raised them that way, you know what I mean? And I think it's just a matter of, you know, so to answer your question in brief, I think with fashion, oftentimes it's people who people respect. You know, if you can say, hey, do you mind for the next meeting to wear a formal Aozai, or to wear, you know, at this next event, do you mind wearing this Aozai? And designers, you know, making that effort to lend or to gift men Aozais, and even women in like in politics or in you know, education or anything else, then not only then the men, you know, get more exposure with the Aozai, but then more women in general, and then every day gets exposure. Because your eyes were raised when I said I teach in an Aozai, you know, but I also want you to understand that, you know, yeah, Aozai comes in all different forms. So if you're thinking a traditional kind of Aozai, that's not necessarily what's, you know, what's going on. But yeah, I normally wear my Aozai that's made of bamboo. It was done by a company called Trust Fund Baby. Long story behind there, it's just like shipping moguls, you know, pre-75ers. And so literally she was a trust fund baby, and she created these Aozais, and they were made from bamboo 20 years ago.
Wow.
And they look like Armani because she was trained in Armani. So it looked, and so everyone joked that is my Armani Aozai, because it absolutely looked like a, you know, 2000 Armani suit Aozai form made of bamboo.
I was walking down from the LA library to a restaurant 2 years ago, and I had this one of my first aoyais, and it was just a badass aoyai. I got stopped like four times on the way to the restaurant. It
you know,
was the most crazy feeling.
I love that feeling. It really feeds into my vanity around fashion. You know, I joke with my friends that I say, you know, if I style you and you don't get a compliment, at least one compliment a day, then, you know, you can take my stylist, you know, card away. I mean, I won't have it. So, I mean, yeah, I love that for you. It must have made you feel so awesome.
Empowered. Yeah. I felt empowered, culturally empowered, you know,
I love that.
But we're not as men, you know, I have a lot of friends that guy friends that love the Vietnamese culture. They're Vietnamese. They live and breathe the books and the films and the music, and they're all about it, but they've never worn an áo dài. And they're like, God, we just don't have the courage. And some of them grew up in Vietnam and left at 14, 15. So they're like, traditionally, men do not wear áo dài. That's just the way it goes.
No one wore áo dài at that time, period. If we're, you know, if that's a group that came over. So there's that aspect of it, right? I think, you know, to give you another answer to your question, how do we, you know, get the outside there out there for men? Have parties, have events where it's like the dress code is outside men and women.
Yeah, I've been doing that.
Yeah. And then so they have to go out and get it or, you know, borrow it or whatever. And then they'll have at least one. And then the same crowd is going to another event of yours. They'll hopefully say, oh, I can't be seen in that one again. Then I'll have to make another one. And then so on and so forth.
There's a tattoo artist in Orange County. His name is Bob. He's very well known. I was at an event with him and we were all wearing, oh yeah, there's like four of us. And he said he had the most brilliant idea. He goes, so in his tattoo shop, he wants to put up a rack. And he owns like 20 of them. And he goes, I'm going to put 20 of my old áo dài's because I can't wear it twice. You know, I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to, each áo dài is burned in essence up. You wear it, right? He goes, I'm going to put up a rack with just 20. And it's like, you can come in and exchange for one on the rack. And you give one and you take one. That way, wow, we can circulate. What a genius idea.
I love it. Well, you know, it makes me, I got to tell you this story. So the Si Hoang also founded an amazing, amazing Aozai Museum just outside of Saigon in Tu Duc. And it's run by, it's curated now by Chinh Ngoc, who was the Vietnam War, you know, Memorial Museum curator. In any case, it is wonderful, but it went for years with just a handful of people visiting it a day. You know, maybe dozens a day at the most, right? And so I always, when it's my pit stop when I'm in Saigon, right? So I always go there. And this last time I got the news that it's being every day it's getting up to 2,000 visitors.
Every day.
Every day. And can I tell you why and how? One person, young cat, just came to the museum and wore an áo dài and started taking pictures and put it on Instagram. And next thing you know, there's a line out the door even before it opens to come in. And so the museum, because it was run by Si Hoang, because he has so many áo dài as well, it has racks and racks of áo dài that for pittances, students go and rent, the male and female. Right. So it would be like equivalent of like maybe $5 to rent it. And you get the áo dài, you get you get the guok, and you get the, you know, whatever you want. And then you go around this beautiful, it's staged like a village.
Oh, so there's an owl,
and then you take pictures. It's like there's a it looks like a village. And then each house, you know, is an exhibit of the áo dài. So you learn about the áo dài and all that. When I was there, they hired professionals to come in and take pictures of their high school group, of their college group, of their families. And there's beautiful áo dài's there. And I partake because, you know, I was there with the founder and the curator, and you know, we went through it and so on and so forth. But it was so fun. And again, because of Instagram, because of being able to wear áo dài, because of the next generation, you know, loving, you know, because of, I guess, Instagram backdrops in a way, oddly enough, because of that, people are learning more about the áo dài. And now that museum is self-sustaining.
That is a dope ass story that I want to take and do here in SoCal. I mean,
let's do it.
That's such a beautiful business model if you think about it. You set up maybe seven rooms, you get like 300-400 áo dài's, put it in, have a few people work it, and it just on the weekends, You could just go with your family, put on some ao yais, and everybody takes pictures. What a genius. I mean, you could just show up if
yeah, they have it all of it now. Yeah, they have the 90s ubiquitous flower fabric going on everywhere that you see. And hey, to my credit, I was living in Vietnam in the 90s, and immediately I was fond of this fabric. And I made not only my ao dai, my family's ao dai, but I made my whole couch that. And then fast forward 20 years, that's like hip. So I've seen Vans that are decked with this. This is like the pattern of this year. Everyone has it. And anyway, people are nostalgic for it, because there's a time that people use it for everything, from furniture to curtains to, fabric for their table and so on and so forth. So anyway, I bring this up because that's happening all over Vietnam, like, stage, sort of Instagram opportunities all through Vietnam. And people, I mean, Vietnamese people, I don't know. It's like, as you know, the day has a sun, Vietnamese people love to take pictures. You know what I mean? We are picture obsessed before picture obsessed things was a thing. You know, we took selfie before selfie was a thing, you know. But in any case, it does really well in Vietnam. And so I think it would just be gangbusters.
Gangbusters in Little Saigon.
And the thing is, once that is happening, then once they get comfortable with wearing this and walking around having fun, have also ao dais available for them to purchase. It's introductions, right? And like I said, more and more events. So it becomes a thing where if it's a Vietnamese event, you will see people in ao dais. Like young people, and different kinds of ao dais, because Leskowicz does the research on this, and it was my same observations when I was in Vietnam in the 90s, which is, Viet Q or overseas Vietnamese came back and they're like, we want this ao dai and that ao dai. So they really transformed the market of making ao dai in Vietnam for the diaspora taste as well,
right,
and for export.
Right.
So you have this transnational, melding of design and market and really revitalizing not just ao dai for in a designer sense, but ao dai for the tailors as well. You get them done in Bentang market and where there's tons of fabric, tons of tailors. And it was the Viet Q that was like, hey, I want to make dozens of this for the US. And they brought it over. And I mean, you see it in restaurant interior design from 20 years ago. Why do our restaurants look like this now? We were hole in the walls and now we have white tablecloths and we have design. That's from Vietnam. That's from people coming to Vietnam to visit and say, hey, a Vietnamese restaurant can be fancy. Let's do that in the US. So, it's that back and forth thing, same thing with how Paris by Night just really influenced aesthetics in Vietnam in the 80s, and 90s. It's just this back and forth thing that I think is important as a scholar and as a person who lives and, in research in Vietnam quite frequently and here in the, trenches of the community and in like places like San Jose, which has the city with the largest, Vietnamese population and knowing Orange County with the largest, population overall. I see these back and forth and I know the origins of things. And if we can educate, our folks about it, I think they can get more excited to know that they can design, and they can, make fashion for them and make it comfortable and make it acceptable. And I think a lot of it is around, the fear of being judged or maybe embarrassment or honestly, maybe this kind of sense of, am I Vietnamese enough to even wear this? These are really, it's all so many levels, And I think if we could ease people's minds about that and allow them to come into Vietnamese culture in this manner at their own pace and with options, we're doing a service.
Carolyn, thank you so much for all of the dialogue today. When and where and what kind of information can you give me about the ao dai festival happening?
Yeah, so it is happening on May 18th. Like I mentioned, the daytime, it will be open to the public outdoors, and it'll be at the Rotunda, which is the beautiful round glass of City Hall building in San Jose. And in the evening, it is a fundraising gala for Friends of Huay, where you will see a show that is the modern fairy tale that is with the designers and the Aozais, and there'll be auctions and performers, etc. And that's you can go to Aozai Festival website, just Google Aozai Festival, and then there will be pricing there for you, and as well as we're going to start putting up the agenda of the festival itself. If you're in the area or like to come, there's also April 12th, the screening of an amazing movie, The Tailor, with a discussion with The Tailor at the San Jose Museum of Art. And then, of course, May 15th, which is Aozai Day. We're having an Aozai gathering at the Martin Luther King Library in downtown San Jose. And the evening will be, you'll get to speak with the designers and meet them and learn their inspiration, the designers that will be featured at Aozai Festival this year. So lots going on.
Lots going on. Carolyn, thank you so much. This was so informative.
Absolutely. I love our conversations and you're wonderful.
Thank you, Carolyn.
All right. Take care.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Christo Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.